Good afternoon. Welcome to the Fathers Family Healthy Communities Forum, presented by Fathers Family Healthy Communities. That's FFHC for short. I'm Saquon Lawrence, Director of Fathers Family Healthy Communities Demonstration Project and co-moderator.
I'm Kirk Harris, Dr. Kirk Harris, Senior Advisor for Fathers, Families, and Healthy Community Demonstration Project and co-moderator with my brother Saquon Lawrence.
FFFC is a demonstration project committed to engaging African-American non-custodial fathers to their children financially, socially, and emotionally so that African-American children will realize better outcomes and possibilities. For the next 8 weeks, we will present FFFC's social marketing campaign called the New Man Project, which is an exploration and promotion of what works when it comes to rebuilding the black family. We want to reimagine the role and image of black men and fathers and work towards a successful campaign for black male achievement. In addition, we'll lift up examples of affirmative black fatherhood, male-female relationships, and effective parenting. Among the topics we'll cover over the next 8 weeks, responsible fatherhood feel and definitions of manhood, rites of passage and mentoring programs for black youth, and we're going to talk to Dr. Marlana Karinga this afternoon, who's going to speak more to this. Effective black leadership and the role of fathers is another area we'll explore. Black womenists, who are allies of Fathers Family Healthy Communities, like the organization Women in Fatherhood. Effective approaches to addressing health disparities between the black community and the larger society. We're going to have Dr. Angela Odom and Dr. Joe West in to talk about health disparities. Examples of strong black families. We're also going to be taking a look at the father's role in educating the black child in the 21st century. And Phil Jackson from Black Star will be in the studio to talk about that. Effective community-based organizations in the black community, both locally and nationally. We'll also examine how to check and challenge the media's image of black men and fathers. Managing legal and personal responsibilities related to financial support of children will be examined. We're going to have Norris Stevens from the Illinois Department of Child Support Services in the studio to talk about that. And lastly, effective workforce development and sector-driven job training activity in Chicago. So as you can tell, every week, FFFC's New Man Project is interested in what's good about the black family and community. Let's talk about fathers as assets. Let's examine our youth as a group with enormous capacity and possibility. Let's lift up the black woman as historic, heroic placemakers in our community and society. Let's reintroduce ourselves to our culture and have a dialogue about its central role in our rescue and reassertion in the society, in the world. So what this means is that FFHC is challenging ourselves and community to dispense with debilitating talk which overemphasizes how bad our communities are, how bad our fathers and politicians are, our leaders, schools, and families are, and instead promote solutions and examples of excellence and the best of what it means to be African-American and human in the world. So that's what we're about. And so, Dr. Harris, last week we had on the forum John Wims, who was one of the fathers of and members of FFHC, who represented his brothers in FFHC very well.
He did an absolutely fabulous job. And I think the important thing to say to our listening audience is he's a prime example of what it looks like when a father is genuinely committed and interested in ensuring there are positive outcomes for his children and his family. So,
that's right.
And he's a FFHC member, and we're very proud of him.
That's right. And so for our listening audience, the fathers in FFHC are not clients. They're not participants or customers. They're members. And so just very briefly, members can avail themselves of five activities, and this is very important. One is legal services to assist with visitation, paternity, and custody issues, as well as expungement of certain categories of criminal records. Two, child support services. FFSC has a strong and cooperative relationship with the Illinois Department of Child Support Services. Demand-side training and job placement services. The fourth is fathers-only peer-to-peer sessions, and I'm in those sessions, and I think that's some of the most important work that
powerful,
we do.
Powerful.
And then the fifth is subsidized father-child outings. And then we also had on the show last Sunday Mr. Bill Laurie, assistant to the president at Chicago Community Trust, who I thought made a really strong case for effective workforce development strategies for non-custodial fathers and the role of values.
And he did a fabulous job in really providing us with some historical context for the a look at the black family and giving us his own perspective on what we should be doing to advance and strengthening families going forward and looking at the role of black men. So it was he did an absolutely fabulous job, and we were so elated that he could spend that time with us last Sunday.
Right, that's right. So, but before we do anything else, we want to thank our funders, the Chicago Community Trust, the Open Society Foundation, and the Woods Fund of Chicago. And we also want to give a shout-out to our partners, our service partners of Felix Family Services, Safer Foundation, North Lawndale Employment Network, the Center for New Horizons, the Chicago Urban League, the Metropolitan Family Services, Jane Addams Resource Corporation, the Sergeant Shriver National Center on Poverty and Law, Chicago Job Council, the City Colleges of Chicago, Chicago Housing Authority, and the Cabrini-Green Legal Aid. So I think that our partners have, most of who are providing workforce development activity is key to our work, because as the research talks about, Kirk, is, you know, if the fathers are not working, they're not making money, it's hard to financially support their children.
That's absolutely correct. And we know that there are a number of systems that low-income fathers may need to navigate in order to ensure that they're connected to their families. Child support is certainly a critical one. The other piece is that making sure that the fathers are working so that they can actually navigate their financial responsibilities. And, you know, as we say, Brother Saquon, is that just because you don't have a job doesn't mean you can't be a good father.
That's right.
And so we know, while that's the journey that many of our members may be on, we also know that they have much to give to their children, whether they're working or not working. And we consider that a critical aspect of the work that we need to do as the men move toward self-sufficiency.
That's right. That's right. And another partner who and we're very proud to have them as a part of kind of the FFHC family is Real Men Cook. And so Real Men Charities is presenting the 24th annual Real Men Cook Father's Day, June 16th, from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Salvation Army Ray and Joan Kroc Community Center at 1250 West 119th Street.
Oh, yeah.
So I told Yvette I'd make sure I'd give her a shout out.
And be over there, man.
Yeah, yeah. Do we have Dr. Karinga on the line yet?
We should. He's not.
Okay. Oh, we got plenty to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
So the other thing, too, I wanted to just talk to you about is going back to Bill's comments last week, and that's the role of philanthropy.
Yeah.
And the Chicago Community Trust has been a major supporter of not just our work and others, groups around the city. But this issue around black fathers, this campaign for black male achievement is picking up steam.
Absolutely.
And part of it is some of the things that's happening in the headlines. We won't talk a lot about that. We know what they are.
Right.
But did you have any comments with regard to the role of philanthropy and kind of,
yeah, you know. I think the role of philanthropy, and you know, you and I have had conversations about this, is they really should be ahead of the curve on some of these issues. Mm-hmm. That there should be an opportunity to ignite a dialogue, a discourse about some of the things that are happening in our communities. And just like in this case where we have Open Society Foundation, the Chicago Community Trust, really looking at investing in a better understanding about how we might uplift African-American men assume their roles and within the context of their families. And when I say assume their roles, I'm not talking about taking control or anything crazy like that, but to be expressed as an asset in their communities and share what they have to share with us in their communities as African-American men. And so I think really foundations serve as an ignition for some of this discourse and opportunity. And I think we have an opportunity to talk to Dr. Karinga, and we're anxious and really wanting to do that. So why don't we go in that direction?
Okay, great. As Kirk was just alluding to, we're pleased to welcome to the show Dr. Marlana Karinga. Dr. Karinga is the professor and chair of African Studies at California State University at Long Beach. He is the chair of the organization US and the National Association of Kawita Organizations, and the executive director of the African American Culture Center and the Kawita Institute of Pan-African Studies. Dr. Karinga is also the author of numerous scholarly articles and books, including Kawaita and the Question of Life and Struggle, Ma'at, the Moral Ideal in Ancient Egypt, A Study in Classical African Ethics, Selections from the Husiya, Sacred Wisdom of Ancient Egypt, Introduction to Black Studies, Fourth Edition, and the Odu Ifa, the Ethical Teachings. Dr. Karinga is also the creator of the Pan-African Cultural Holiday Kwanzaa, and the Nguza Saba, the Seven Principles. He is also the author of the authoritative text on Kwanzaa titled Kwanzaa, A Celebration of Life, Family, Community, and Culture. Dr. Karinga is the recipient of numerous awards for scholarship, leadership, and service, including the Paul Robeson Zora Neale Hurston Award for scholarly works contributive to the understanding, development, and appreciation of African world culture given to him by the National Council of Black Studies. He also received the C.L.R. James Award for Outstanding Publication for Scholarly Work that Advanced the Discipline of Africana Studies and Black Studies, also received from the National Council of Black Studies. Dr. Karinga is also the subject of the newly released book by Dr. Malefe Asante titled Marlana Karinga, An Intellectual Portrait, and I recommend people get that book. It's an excellent book. Dr. Ringer is currently writing a book on the social and ethical philosophy of Malcolm X titled The Liberation Ethics of Malcolm X, Critical Consciousness, Moral Grounding, and Transformative Struggle. Welcome to the show, Marlana.
It's good to be here, Segura.
Asante.
Thank you so much.
No, I'm so glad.
Thanks for the invitation for the chance to dialogue with you and your associates.
Thank you, Dr. Karinga. It's certainly an honor and a pleasure. I know very intimately of your work.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad. I look forward to our conversation.
Yeah, so let's get right to it. So the first question, Dr. Karinga, is can you define rites of passage for our listening audience and why you insist that it be grounded in culture?
Right. The very definition of rites of passage is that it is a culturally grounded process and practice of bringing young boys and girls into manhood and womanhood. And we're going to concentrate mainly on men, but with the appropriate changes, we can say the same thing for women. What we teach in the majando, and the Swahili word for that is majandum, what we teach are culturally grounded ways of being and becoming man, African man in the world. We have to make a distinction between just any man and African man, right? Mm. Because culture is the unique way that humans are what they are in the world. In other words, culture makes us what kind of human we are. This is the kind of human I am, African. I'm not any other kind of African. And so I have to take the position that each culture and people is a unique and equally valid and valuable way of being human in the world. So African is the way I'm human in the world. And black people, that's how they are human in the world. They can't be human. And anything, any other way human, if they try to be any other kind of human, they deform and degrade themselves. When they deny their dignity, their identity, that is a degrading thing. There is no dignity in self-denial. And you can consciously deny yourself, or you can unconsciously deny yourself. Mm-hmm. So I repeat, young boys, and of course young girls, need grounding, need centering, need orientation. And this cannot be done by others or with others' views and values. The dominant society is an oppressive society, a racist and racializing society, which privileges and empowers white and problematizes and disempowers and prevents the empowerment of black people and other people of color. So our oppressor cannot be our teacher, neither the men and women, nor their ideas, their images, and their practices. I conclude by saying we must learn and speak our own special culture truth and make our own unique contribution to how this society and the world are reconceived and reconstructed. And that means cultural grounding.
Okay, good. What are the core elements of a rites of passage program?
The core elements are, first of all, separation from the larger community and focusing on a program that teaches manhood, right? Mm-hmm. And then during the teaching, people are challenged to bring forth from themselves the best of what it means to be African and human in the world. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And then third, after the separation and the instruction, there's a return to the community with greater knowledge, greater sense of responsibility, and greater capacity to participate in meaningful ways, not only to continue one's development, but also to contribute meaningfully to community, society, and the world. So those are the three fundamental sections of it. Okay. At the heart of it is this whole idea about a learning to be a man. See, if people think that becoming a man is the same thing as being male, but it's not. You know, like or being growing up into a larger male, right? And so what we have to do is realize that manhood is both a process and a practice to come into manhood. So they're taught that you have to have criteria for being a man. And the first one is to realize that manhood is a process and a practice, that you have to come into it. Mm. You have to become it. And you have to self-consciously choose to mold yourself into manhood as opposed to just an irresponsible male that is claiming manhood by age or sexual capacity, but actually is not man in the social sense that we talk about.
Right.
See, if it's just male, it's just biological. If it's just biological, it's just male.
Right.
But if it's man, it's both social and biological.
Right.
And the defining thing, the hub and hinge on which it all turns, is the cultural grounding that makes us socially competent. Mm-hmm. A socially competent male becomes a man. But an incompetent, socially incompetent, culturally ungrounded male is just that, what I just said.
Right.
Socially incompetent and culturally ungrounded. So
right.
That's the first criteria. The second is respect for your species have. That is woman, male, female, pardon me, woman, male and female, or half of humanity, right?
Right.
I know there are variations of this, right? But I'm talking about the core body of what we call humans, a male and female. And so the black community requires, for its development, harmonious, mutually supportive, mutually respectful, and mutually beneficial relations between men and women, between male and female, between boys and girls, and men and women. We need that.
Yeah.
And if we don't have that, we can never progress. I don't care what other arrangement people make. We must have this kind of mutual respect and mutually beneficial exchanges between men and women, between male and female, between boys and girls. And here I'm just talking, when I say male and female, you know, I'm just talking, so I won't have to keep saying girl and women.
Right.
I don't want to get that mixed up with what I said earlier.
Right.
Then the third thing we have to do is talk about mental maturity. See, we have to teach people knowledge, thinking of knowledge. And then right with that, always with mental maturity, comes moral maturity. Now, mental maturity and moral maturity are given together, even though they're separate things. When we organize them, The same thing is you can never teach knowledge without teaching at the same time the moral importance of knowing. Mm. One of the beauty, I'm writing this book on Malcolm called The Liberation Ethics of Malcolm X. And Malcolm used to say to us that, you know, at the core of his teachings was wake up, clean up, and stand up.
Right.
But why did he put wake up before he meant clean, before he put clean up? Wake up means coming into consciousness, what we're just talking about now. Mm. Second, clean up means moral grounding, which we're talking about now. Mm. And stand up means accepting responsibility for life and struggle. And so what happens here is that both Malcolm and Kawahita, that's my philosophy, Kawahita, which is an ongoing synthesis of the best of African thought and practice in constant exchange with the world. And our argument is that unless you wake up, unless you come into knowledge, you can't make the right moral choice. Mm-hmm. So we got to have knowledge first. That's why the Odu Ifa, the sacred text of the Yoruba, says that the first criteria for a good world is knowledge, full knowledge of things. And the first criteria for creating a good world is wisdom, obon, adequate to govern the world. And govern here means to pull people together for good purposes. And so what that's akoso is the word. And so what we need here is mental maturity that is informed by moral maturity. We got to teach the young men ethics to speak truth, to do justice, to honor their elders and their ancestors, their parents, to cherish and challenge their children, not to leave them, but to cherish and at the same time challenge them to grow and to become the men and women they ought to be, to bring forth, as I said before, the best of what it means to be African and human, speak their own special culture truth to the world, and make their own unique contribution to how the society is reconceived and reconstructed. And then we move to protection and provision. I'm doing these together, but, you know, I can take them separately. That they have to learn that there's a heritage and a life source in the black community, and that they have an obligation to protect it. Not always physical fighting. Sometimes you might have self-defense units, you know, to, you know, keep people from just, you know, running in there on you. But the main thing is to have this knowledge and skill, right? And to want to protect that which is good and beautiful, that which grounds you and gives you your sense of meaning and history in the world. And then you say, I'm going to protect it. Like when I think about the heritage of Malcolm X and Fannie Lou Hamer and Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman and Messenger Muhammad and all those other people who gave their lives so that I could live fuller and more meaningful ones than all my other people could do, then I feel I need to protect and preserve that. And I need to contribute to it. I have to build on it. I always said to people, each generation, you know, has to ask itself, what has it contributed to the legacy left here? A generation that does not advance its people further than it was when it encountered them must ask itself, what is its reason for existence? It must ask itself so that we teach this. Then we talk about protection and provision that we have to add to. We have to provide for our children and our families, but we also have to provide for the community. A community must grow. It must develop. And it depends upon people who think and act in life-enhancing and dignity-affirming ways. And when we act in dignity-denying ways and life-destroying ways, we, in fact, undermine the community. And so we have to provide that which nurtures the community, which strengthens the community, which expands the community. We have to talk like that and think like that. Otherwise, we're not who we're supposed to be.
Right.
And finally, we believe that you have to stand up, as Malcolm said. And that means being socially engaged. That is, you have to do something that is active and meaningful to advance African culture and history and to expand the realm of human freedom and human flourishing for African people and other people in the world. That's just our heritage. That means living up to this awesome history of people who stood up first. African people are the first people. We stood up first, spoke the first human truth. We are the elders of humanity. and then standing up and speaking that special culture of truth, we, in fact, introduced some of the basic disciplines of human knowledge in the Nile Valley and taught the world what was good and beautiful. And so I think it's very important for us to remember that when we teach our children, to give them an expansive conception of themselves beyond the concept of ghetto denizens and ends and all those other things they self-destructively might call themselves in moments of madness.
Right. Dr. Karinga, I want to say we're gonna go to break now. You've been dropping some serious knowledge, and we want to come back with you and explore these issues even more. So if you could just hold on with us and keep that knowledge flowing, we'll be right back after break.
All right now.
Non-custodial fathers, we know you may need help to become better fathers. Tune in to WVON every Sunday at 2 p.m. for the Fathers, Families, Healthy Communities Forum. Saquon Lawrence and myself, Dr. Kirk Harris, will discuss the New Man Project, which is a lifting up of what works when it comes to rebuilding the black family.
Reimagining the role and image of black men and fathers and working toward a successful campaign for black male achievement. Non-custodial fathers, become a member. Work with other fathers in a safe space who are committed to being in the lives of their children in positive ways. Explore what it truly means to be a man and effective ways of co-parenting with the mother of your children. Commit to engaging in demand-side job training and access to jobs. Work towards establishing a cooperative relationship with child support services. Work to establish visitation and other ethical and legal arrangements to spend quality time with your children.
Fathers, call us at 312-252-0460, extension 120. Visit our website at www.ffhc.org or listen to the show on WVON every Sunday at 2 p.m. WVON is now on iHeartRadio. If you have a smartphone or tablet, download the iHeartRadio app and enjoy WVON wherever you are. This program is brought to you by Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities.
How do you wake up the entire African American community to the hidden issue of mental health problems?
It showed up in my life through one of my best friends, and we've been friends for over 30 years.
Share your story.
If we would have known earlier, you know, we would have been much more supportive with her.
Once I reached out to my sister, it got a little better. Once I told my mother, it got a little better. The more I talked about it, I felt it coming off.
The healing is in me, and the healing in a journey can also be extended to others.
It's our community and our mental health.
Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing.
If you're strong enough to just open your mouth, that's all it takes.
And the most revolutionary and healing thing that black people can do right now is to love one another.
It's time to share ourselves. Healing starts with us. Search online for stories that heal. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
Welcome back to Science Today. And we already have our next caller. Welcome. Who's this?
Hi, I'm Philip.
Hello, Philip. You sound really young.
Not really. I'm 9.
Oh, wow. You're still in elementary school, right?
Does that matter?
Oh, no, not at all. What's your question?
Well, I know the molecular formula for water is H2O. I also know that hydrocarbon is CH3CH250CH3. Glucose is C6H12O6. The general formula for an alkene is CnH2n+2. But what I can't seem to find is any scientific formula for Bob.
Bob?
My goldfish.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
Over a million Americans at risk of foreclosure have been helped by Making Home Affordable. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE.
I'm home.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
My name is Tom.
My name is Cindy.
We give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
We know our time and money are going to the right places.
We don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
WBON.com. The website. Check it out.
The Talk of Chicago is 1690 WBON. Chicago.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Kirk Harris with my brother Saquon Lawrence. We're here with Dr. Karinga. And Dr. Karinga, you've stimulated a lot of calls here. There's a couple of brothers called. One wanted to express his thanks to you for the work that you're doing on Malcolm X and the role that you play in advancing the understanding and leadership that's occurring in the black community. And he just wanted to commend you on your historic and lifelong work and make sure that you understand that you're appreciated. So Imani called and shared that with us. And then we had another caller, Tommy, who was really wanted to suggest to us that there's three things that are really important as we're doing our work. The importance of jobs for men, because if a man can't stand up and be financially self-sufficient, it's going to be a challenge for him and his family. And secondly, the contradictions that often exist in society with respect to saying you want somebody to work, but then, you know, if a person has a child support order, you take their and you're enforcing that against them, you essentially take their license away from them or do something else that is counter to their ability to kind of get work, you know? It's a challenge.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand,
so
he wanted to.
The
other thing that that Tommy said is that, you know, a little bit of discussion about where we might go from here, and I think that's part of what we're talking about today. So, Dr. Karinga, we wanted to continue with a question, and this is really connecting what you've talked about with the work that we do at Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities. And what do you think the connection is between this rites of programming? The rites of passage programming and initiatives as it relates to the work that we're doing with non-custodial fathers, because many of these fathers, many of these members that are part of Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities are you know, they're in their late 20s, early 30s. So, you know, in some ways, you know, either in this point of rites of passage may, while it's never too late, you know, they hadn't necessarily always gone through that. Do you have any thoughts about how we might think about the rites of passage issues within the context of the work of Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities?
Yes. Thank you very much, Dr. Harris. And may I respond a little bit to what you said about the jobs and employment, because part of my response includes that. So what I want to do is go back to the whole idea of rites of passage and the instructive, the second part of that, because I didn't go into details in the instruction. The instruction is not just lectures, but it's also peer collaborative teaching and learning, where people with ideas learn to value what they know and to share that knowledge with each other on a good basis, on an ethical basis, rather than in a negative, self-destructive way. And then the second thing about this instruction period is that it involves a practicum. That is to say, people learn to act out, like working out a budget or interviewing for a job or doing other things. They have to have a practice. They can't just listen. They can't just talk and discuss. They have to have a practice of standing up, of walking straight, of doing this, of doing that, things that go into the daily making of manhood. And then also they need a modeling. There's a modeling that goes on, a modeling by themselves, but also by the mentors, which is another part. And this is where your fatherhood comes in. I believe that the fathers, if they're going to participate, they can teach, right? They can work in tandem with the instructors in the rites of passage program. And they have to conceive, and all the mentors have to conceive, mentoring as more than taking young boys to the movies and the museum. Mm. That's trips.
Right.
We
right.
need networking. Right. We need to link them up with what is good. We need right. to find them jobs and employment. We need to work with them on going to school and making sure they do their homework. We've got to have a total approach to molding these young boys into men, to cultivating a life of the mind as well as a life in practical daily life. So it just seems to me, as well as life in everyday situations, so it just seems to me that the absent father or the father that absent but willing to engage must engage in those processes. And he can teach, he can mentor, but the mentoring and the teaching must be preceded by an education himself or an education simultaneously, because you don't want him teaching the wrong thing.
Right,
just
right.
because one is a biological parent, you know, doesn't mean that they can, in fact, teach. And that's what we need to do, help prepare the fathers. And y'all are doing that. So
right.
what we do with the fathers then is to strengthen their capacity to be the parents they ought to be.
Right. Well, Dr. Karinga, let me ask you this question. This is slightly off script, but, you know, it's interesting that, you know, the cultural elements of the work of rites of passage are really critically important, but yet we live in a society where, you know, there's this narrative about the post-racial America and the you know, why can't we all get along, so to speak, narrative, if you will, and why do we got to focus on this thing, this cultural thing or that cultural thing? Why can't we all just be Americans? What do you have to? What's your response to that?
What you said, if I understand correctly, you understand that that's only directed toward black people. We're the only people in the world that can be too much of themselves. You can't be too white, you can't be too Jewish, you can't be too French, you can't be too Japanese or German. You can only be too black. That's too black, right? Second, no one else is asked to give up their culture. They're asking you to give up your unique an equally valid and valuable way of being human in the world. They're asking you to give up the heritage of Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth and Malcolm X and Minister and Martin Luther King, Reverend Martin Luther King, and all the Du Bois and Anna Julia Cooper. They're asking you to give up the learning centers, the ancient learning centers of Mali and Songhai. They ask you to give up the civilization of ancient Egypt. They're asking you to forget that, to erase your memory and pretend you sprang up in Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia, and you are constantly dependent on white people. I reject that. And nobody in their right mind augurs that kind of wild talk.
Right.
We can't give up ourselves. And it is criminal, as Malcolm said, to suggest people should do that and make them hate themselves. What we're doing is encountering a new what we call soft racism as opposed to red meat raw racism. In the old days, they just called your name. And like they did with Barack, sending watermelon cards and stuff and always harassing him, right?
Right.
That's the raw kind. But the other kind is to try to argue with you in such a way you condemn yourself. And Fanon talked about this. Fanon, one of our great minds of the 20th century, and a great revolutionary fighter, but also a social psychiatrist, had argued that people under oppression, all people, not just African people, but all people under oppression who cannot find the resources to resist the problematization of their life go through four basic stages. First, they doubt themselves. Second, they deny themselves. Third, they condemn themselves. And finally, they mutilate themselves. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing is you're talking about a dialogue that the dominant society has created to make us doubt ourselves, okay? Second, to deny ourselves. Third, to condemn ourselves. And finally, to mutilate ourselves. So we deform ourselves both psychically and physically, you know, chopping off, you know, like altering our nose, yellowing our hair, chopping off our cheeks in order to look like the people who caused the pathology in us in the first place. I reject that. What sane person would do that?
Right. So you just kind of laid out a really insightful perspective about that question. And we have another one for you as we kind of think about this issue of the specifics of the Rites of Passage program. What's the importance of really the context for gender in those programs? And what role do you see as gender playing in the articulation of Rites of Passage programs over time?
About whether or not girls and boys can be taught at the same time?
Well, that's one. And then is there specific strands of approaches that should be adopted based on the gender-specific nature of the Rites of Passage programming?
Well, let me just answer something, and then if that's not all you need, then you can follow up.
Okay.
First of all, see, again, it's just us that people put this on. Jews, Gentiles, Catholics, they have programs where they're Muslim. They got programs where the men and boys, the boys and girls are separated. The idea behind this was, and also it comes from our history. We have rites of passage programs that are for men and for boys and some for girls.
Right.
Because, number one, you have subjects specific to these genders.
Right.
You know, it's just, we're not going to discuss females, the things that sometimes females have to discuss versus boys, what they have to discuss about sexuality, about their genitals, all right? About periods that happen in their body and changes, et cetera. Those things are specific. You can't just discuss those right out in the same way. Second, we know that when men, boys and girls, especially when they come into hormonal transition and stages, that they can be diverted by this and that they can lose focus or they can even begin to perform like you see on those nature programs, you know, like just performing for the different sexes, especially the boys, to get attention. So I don't think that we're going to be crushed if they're together because public school put them together, right? But if we're talking about a serious crisis among black boys and the need to bring them into manhood and to make them serious, all the time we can spend focusing them on themselves and what they need to be self-affirming, dignity-affirming, life-enhancing person, then we need to do that. And people that say that, we should go and say that to the Catholic schools and to the Jewish school and to the Muslim school. They don't start with us and put a burden on us. They don't put on anybody else. They don't put that on anybody else. So I believe, though, I should say on the end, that at one point after they come through those passages, that part of it at the end, as I said, the second criteria for manhood is that you have what? Respect for your species have. So sooner or later, you've got to put them back together, and you've got to let them learn together, because if they learn too long apart, they still won't know how to relate.
That's right.
Okay. Marlana, we have about 5 minutes left. And so I think the one question that I think our listeners would be really interested in is how should we proceed with respect to developing rites of passage programs across the city, state, and nation? You and I have talked about this. It's something we're really interested in.
The first thing we need to do, I think, Saquon, is we have to have a conversation with you and Dr. Harris and other people that you know are in the movement. We have a meeting and talk about standardizing the rites of passage program. A lot of people are doing well, but they're working in isolation, and they don't have the kind of synergy that would come from a national program and periodic, regular meetings with people in the field that teach similar things, that learn best practice and best ideas from each other, and that produces a literature that lasts beyond the people doing it now, that produces a body of literature and images and audio visuals that aid us in this. We got a lot to do, and we need to first not have a big conference again. We'll do that. I think we need need conferences, but more than anything else, we need workshops of small numbers first, and then expand in concentric circles as we consolidate. So maybe the first time we meet, we have 10 to 20 people. Next time, 40 to 50. Then after we do that, maybe we can have a conference and say what we've done. But we have to. You see, like, when people go to conference, they say, we're going to learn. And they get up and say, I don't know what we learned. Nobody mentioned it. We don't even need that. That is too long. And I know we don't have a 5 minutes, so let me just finish. So what did I say? I said we need a seminar of leaders, right, mm-hmm. to come together first. We need to develop literature and audiovisual thing. And we need to develop regular meetings where we can always get best practice and best idea. Many of the rites of passage, pro, if not 95% of, used in Guzo Saba. That's the beginning. Let's start with this. Let's identify those people that are using this and working in this. And then other people who if they're not doing that, are open to that and see if we can't standardize. Standardization is the first point, and then the literature development, and then the institutional development of similar chapters of this organization that we need. Because unless you institutionalize this and spread it around and strengthen it, you always just be making dents in the problem. You can't solve it in a national way if it's a national problem without having a national approach and a national philosophy and structure for that approach.
Absolutely. Has the approach, Dr. Karinga, in the execution of rites of passage programs, in your judgment, changed over time? We've been doing them for a long time. Here it is, 2013. Have you observed a change in the way that they've been executed? There's something that we should learn, some lessons that we can learn from how they've been practiced that could help us going forward?
Seguin, but they change according to new people that come. New people come in and they bring new ideas, but they're not linked. That's what I meant by the fragmentation of our efforts. Our efforts are fragmented. And really, let me just say this again. There's good work being done all over the country, and so I want to give credit to people who've held back the water, right? But now, let's ask ourselves, is just holding back and standing in place where we want to be? No. We want to develop, and that means pooling our brain power, pooling our resources, giving us a structure from which all of us can draw strength. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. Well, Dr. Karinga, I really appreciate you. I know enough to know about your day that, you know, there's a lot going on there in Los Angeles at the Heykalu. So I appreciate
Dr.
you.
Dr. Karinga, you've been fabulous, and I want to just thank you for sharing your time, your wisdom, and your kind of your deep historical knowledge with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Dr. Harris. And thanks again, Saquon. And let's have this conversation on a regular basis, and let's think about whether or not we can have that kind of seminar and that kind of eventual conference and development of standardization, literature, and structure.
Right, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. Sante Malana. All right. So that was that's important, right? I mean, everything that Dr. Karinga shared with us, we've talked about this, and also Dr. Troy Harden. And the Tapestry Group have brought a lot of this to our peer-to-peer groups every Monday night. And so we are grateful to him and the brothers in Tapestry. Also, what we want to do, we want to talk about a little bit about our invited guests coming up. Susan Taylor, founder of National Cares Mentoring Movement and editor-in-chief emeritus of Essence Magazine. Phil Jackson will be joining us, Executive Director of Black Star. Joe Jones, Executive Director for the Center for Urban Families in Baltimore. And Kenny Braswell, Executive Director for the National Clearinghouse for Responsible Fatherhood in D.C. Angela Kenyatta of ISIS Productions, who's doing a film on black fathers right here in Chicago. Phil Thomas, Executive Director of ETA Theater. Norris Stevens, Illinois Department of Child Support Services. Yvette Moyo, Real Men Cook Charities. Also, Sean Dubb and Rashid Shabazz from Open Society's Foundation's Campaign for Black Male Achievement, and, of course, the members of FFHC, our fathers. FFHC is excited about working with WVON, of course, as they celebrate their 50th anniversary, the voice of the nation, and to be part of a national discussion on the issues and challenges of our times. And so we encourage our listening audiences to check out Cliff Kelly and Perry Small. Also, you know, WVON is now on iHeartRadio, so if you have a smartphone or tablet, download the iHeartRadio app, and you can enjoy the show that way. Cliff Kelly's show, again, he's going to be talking about the NRA rallies against gun control. Clarence Thomas, I guess he called Obama elite. I didn't know that, Kirk. I guess Cliff is going to be talking about that.
I don't know, what does he consider himself?
Also, next week, Perry Small. She will, of course, recap the political headlines from the week. And stay in touch with WVON on Facebook, like our new page. Search for WVON 1690 AM. Look for the 50th logo. And on Twitter, follow WVON, follow at WVON 1690. And you can check out the web, www.won.com. Any final remarks, Dr. Harris?
Yeah, well, let me just say this, a couple of things. Please do check out the Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities website at www.ffhc.org. Please check us out on Facebook and Twitter. We're there, and you can see that on our website. And I just want to just quickly just say how wonderful it was to have Dr. Karingo on the phone today, and how he really relayed to us the importance of culture and not to be fearful or denying of our culture, because right. It's the foundation upon which we stand up and represent ourselves as African Americans, as Black people in America. And it's the embracement, if you will, of that culture that brings us our strength and our capacity to do what we need to do with our youth, to do what we need to do with our families, and right. to be the Black men we need to be as we're out in the world. So I just want to thank Dr. Karinga for that message, for that wisdom, and for dropping the kind of knowledge he did today.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for the couple of callers that called in. Also, we want to acknowledge that Mother's Day is next Sunday, so we're going to be on. So we got some surprises for folks.
Oh yeah!
When we leave the studio, I got some calls I'm going to make to some sisters and see if they might want to join us in the studio. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting. And also, we want to have next week another father, another member in the studio. And to the brothers, every Monday night, I will see you at 6 o'clock tomorrow in our peer-to-peer group. And I think that's about it for us. So until next Sunday, take care.
Take care. Be ready. Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities is going to be with you again next week at 2 o'clock, as always. And please have a wonderful, wonderful week.
WBON.com. The website. Check it out.
The Talk of Chicago is 1690 WBON Sherman, Chicago. The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WBON. The Talk of Chicago and the voice of the nation is 1690.